This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 268.
Hey folks, this podcast is brought to you by CBDMD, makers of CBD gummies, which come from real hemp plants grown right here in the USA. More and more athletes are discovering the natural health benefits of CBD for pain treatment and recovery. So go to CBDMD.com and use the coupon code MTA20 for 20% off any of their products. That's CBDMD.com. Use the code MTA20.
This episode is sponsored by Action Heat. Action Heat makes the world's best heated clothing, like heated jackets, socks, gloves, hats, and more. And it's all powered by a rechargeable battery, so you get heat on demand at the touch of a button. It's perfect for anyone on your holiday gift list or for yourself if you struggle with coldness over the winter. And you can save 20% off your order when you go to actionheat.com/MTA. That's actionheat.com/MTA.
Welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast, where we empower and inspire you to go the distance. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we interview ultra runner and Guinness record holder Pete Kostylnik about his amazing 97-day self-supported run from Alaska to Florida. That's right, folks. He did that. And in this episode's quick tip, Angie answers a listener question about how to adjust your training if you're an older runner. And of course, you can get the motivation and support you need to reach your goals in the next year with an Academy membership. Learn more when you visit MarathonTrainingAcademy.com. So, Angie, at the time of this recording, people should be finding out if they got into the Berlin Marathon or not.
That's right.
Congrats to all of you out there that got in. That's a race that we really enjoyed doing a couple years back. We're not going to be running it this year, but we are going to be at the London Marathon, as we've talked about on the podcast. But yeah, Berlin Marathon, that's a great race.
Yeah, it was one of my favorites for sure.
Nice and flat. Lots of records have been set there. And speaking of records, recently there was a 100-mile trail world record set by Zach Bitter here in the U.S., and that happened at the Tunnel Hill 100 in Southern Illinois. We used to live close to Southern Illinois.
That's right.
He ran 100 miles in 12 hours, 8 minutes, and 36 seconds. Of course, the course is super flat, conducive for world records. And if you're wondering, Zach's average pace for 100 miles was 7 minutes and 17 seconds per mile, or 4 minutes and 32 seconds per kilometer.
Wow.
Can you imagine that?
No, I cannot. That is out of this world.
Amazing. So cool stuff going on. And of course, 100 miles is a long way to run, goes without saying. And we're going to talk to a guy on this episode who's done some 100-mile plus races, and this summer slash fall ran over 5,300 miles, accumulatively day after day, averaging about 55 miles a day. So yeah, that's like 88 kilometers a day, total kilometers of 8,529K. Pretty inspiring stuff. I think you guys are really going to enjoy this conversation. Before we get into that, Angie, what is going on out there in MTA land?
We've got lots of great things happening out there. We'd like to say congratulations to Philip in the Academy on his new half marathon PR of 1 hour and 53 minutes. Also, we got a note from Sarah. She says, I got a PR at the Des Moines Hungry Turkey Half Marathon with a time of 1 hour, 48 minutes, and 9 seconds. I was also 15th overall female and 4th female in my age group. And Barbie posted, I got a 7-minute PR in my half marathon, and I'm very excited about my time. Every little improvement counts. I also checked off my MTA virtual half run, too. And this note comes from Rachel in the Academy. She says, the Seattle Marathon is in the bag. I think I experienced every possible emotion during this race, including my first finish line lump in the throat when I realized that despite the hills, I had PR'd by 5 minutes. My hip flexor tendonitis had kicked in at about the halfway point, which was discouraging for a while. Then I remembered this interview with an ultra runner I'd heard. She said at some point, pain becomes your new normal, so you just adjust mentally to that, and somehow it doesn't hurt as much. So I got my zen on and embraced the suck and realized that it works. Thanks to everyone for the encouraging words when I posted about my pre-race nerves last week. I especially want to thank Coach Lynn for reminding me to keep up my positive mental game. It really made a huge difference.
Well, that's great, because I remember just a couple of days before the race, she was pretty nervous, and we were kind of encouraging her, like, hey, you got this. You can do it, you know. She was kind of hoping that the race would be canceled because of the rain or something.
Yeah, and that's one of the great things about the Academy is that people are posting in there, you know, being really honest about their training and their, you know, ups and downs, and being able to get support from people who are going through the same things, and, you know, advice from the coaches in there and other more experienced runners. So it's just a great group.
So if you're feeling nervous before your race and you're secretly hoping that it gets canceled, just show up and get running. You'll probably enjoy it once you get into the flow. And you never know, you might come away with a PR or some awesome new life experience like that.
That's right. And this email comes from Ashley. She says, "Hi, Angie and Trevor. I'm officially a marathoner. I ran the beautiful Queenstown Marathon down here in New Zealand. A few months ago, a close friend recommended I listen to your podcast, and I was hooked. I spent all my hour-long walks to and from work listening to every episode I could and adding to my running toolbox. While I trained and ran by myself, I carried all of your wisdom and advice with me. And during the marathon, I repeated to myself, I do have what it takes to run a marathon. By 30 kilometers, my face ached from grinning, and I felt like $1 million. My mantra changed to good form is free speed, thanks to Jonathan Beverly, when I started to hurt around 35 kilometers. And when the going got really tough, I reminded myself, fatigue is an emotion and I'm in control of my emotions. Seeing the crowds in Queenstown and hearing them cheer me on as I made my way to the finish, I found I had more left in the tank and sprinted over the line to finish in 4 hours, 30 minutes, and 2 seconds. I'm beyond proud of myself and I can't wait to run another marathon."
Wow, thank you so much for that story and that report. Ashley, congrats on completing your first marathon. You beat my first marathon time by 1 minute, so extra props. And just so many good things that she highlighted. I forgot that quote by Jonathan Beverly, that good form is free speed.
It's so true. Yeah, a great reminder.
Yeah, who doesn't like free speed?
Yeah, I love the fact that she came with a tool bag full of positive mantras, and she could just pick them out of the bag, you know, when she needed them, depending on what she was going through at the moment.
Exactly.
And this last note is from Elizabeth, and you had mentioned earlier the Tunnel Hill Ultra Marathon in Vienna, Illinois. Well, she ran her first 50 miler there, and she says, "There was a frigid wind chill of 18 degrees, and it never warmed up much above the mid-20s.
Well, the wind was from Zach Bitter going so fast.
I think so. She says, "I've never been so cold for so long, but I finished in 12 hours. It was a fabulous course and event. Again, thanks for all the advice that you two provide."
All right. Well, congrats on accomplishing a 50-miler. That is amazing, Elizabeth, and it's cool to hear that you were there. Thanks for being a listener to the podcast. Well on my way, well on my way. As many of you know, this summer we drove to Alaska, and Angie did a marathon up there, and then we drove back with our kids and a camper and kind of podcasted from the road. We called it Angie and Trev's Most Excellent Summer Adventure.
Turns out I should have run there and back.
I think he'd still be out there.
Probably.
And so while we were driving back, somebody, I forget who, told me about Pete Kostilnik. And I'd heard of the guy before, but I sort of, you know, hadn't thought about him in a while. But they said, "Hey, Pete is running from Alaska to Florida. Check it out." So I've been following him on Instagram, and I sent him a message when he was about halfway. I said, "Hey, we'd love to have you on the podcast. I'm glad that we finally were able to arrange this after he finished and had a couple days to rest." So Pete Kostilnik is a 31-year-old ultra runner from Iowa. He currently lives in Ohio. He has the Guinness World Record for the fastest coast-to-coast crossing of the United States by foot, a record that he set in 2016. We'll ask him about that. And he's also a 2-time winner of the Badwater 135 Ultra Marathon in Death Valley. But most recently, what we want to talk to him about was his Key to Key run from Kenai, Alaska to Key West, Florida. And we will sort of have him walk us through why he did that, what was he thinking, and what led to that decision to take the plunge and do something like this. And logistically, how did he pull it off? Because he was totally self-supported, pushing all of his gear in a jogging stroller the whole way. What did you think about the conversation?
Well, it was amazing, for one thing. And talking to someone like this, even though I can never relate to running that far, and I'm sure a lot of listeners would be in the same boat as I am, I just always think that we are capable of so much more than we can imagine.
Yeah. I mean, Angie, you've done a 50-miler. Can you imagine doing day after day after day after day?
No.
How did you feel after running 50 miles?
It was more like how I felt the next day.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, I was not ready to go out there and do 50 more miles. Let's just put it that way.
All right, so this is going to be great, guys. Let's go ahead and jump into our conversation with Pete Kostilnik right now. Yeah, running down a dream. Never would come to me. Okay, we're on the podcast now with Pete Kostelnik. He is joining us from Ohio, and of course, as you guys know, we're in Pennsylvania, so Pete, we're practically neighbors, right?
I can practically see you.
Pete, we've got so much to ask you about. Let's start from kind of going back to the beginning. How did you get into this crazy world of long-distance running?
Yeah, so I'd done a couple of years of cross country in high school, but during college, I kind of got away from running for a few years. I was doing an internship out in Washington, D.C., and I was like, well, I got all this time on my hands. I'm only doing 40 hours a week, so what do I do with the rest of my time? And so I got back into running. There was the Marine Corps Marathon out there. I looked to sign up, and I trained for it, and that was in 2008, and really, so now 10 years later, you know, it's been quite a journey since then.
After that first marathon, what did you tell yourself?
You know, I finished. I had a couple of beers, and usually when I'm drinking, it's usually when I decide what to do next with running, but then I was like, that was fun, but I'm never doing it again, type of mentality. You know, I went back to Iowa State where I went to college and grew up, and I actually met my now wife, Nikki, there that last semester. And she was actually one of my roommates that semester. I'd never met her before. And there's four of us, and her and one of the other roommates would go running, and I would sit there on the couch drinking beer and, you know, be like, all right, no, that's it. I'm going to go run with you guys. I guess I'll start running again. I kind of blame her. So whenever she asked, you know, what race are you doing next, or how much time are you going to be away? It's a lot of times I'll remind her that she's the reason I kind of got back into running. Because the first time I ran with her, she kicked my butt about 2 or 3 miles into the run. We were at the indoor track at Iowa State. She left me in the dust. And ever since then, I think the reason I run so much is so I'll never let her beat me again.
Sounds like a good motivation.
Yeah.
So after a while, you got away from doing road marathons and you kind of decided to get into the world of ultra running.
Yeah, I got back into marathons in 2009, so I didn't really skip much. And I qualified for Boston, and I did Boston in 2010. But I kept getting injured. I kept doing like the same run every day. I've never had a coach. And so I would do like 10 mile runs at like a marathon pace every day. And, you know, which is kind of silly. So I just always had these IT band injuries. And so in 2011, I was just like, I'm sick and tired of like, I just keep injuring myself. I'm probably not going to break 3 hours in a marathon. So that year, 2011, I got into ultra marathons, but also triathlons, and you know, did Pikes Peak Marathon and all sorts of crazy. Did a rim to rim at the Grand Canyon with some friends. So that was kind of like the fork in the road year. Like, you know, what do I want to do with marathons or triathlons and stuff like that? And I just really loved doing the ultra marathons. And so I got into that in 2011, did my first 100 miler that fall, at the Ozark 100. And, you know, ever since then, I just keep loving it and going further and doing crazier distances. And it's funny because I thought at the time back in 2010, 2011, I wasn't going to break 3 hours. And then I did a road marathon in 2015, really not really even training for it. And I got 2:41. So, you know, I think there's something to be said about ultra marathons, high mileage training, and then you can still do pretty good at the road marathons too.
So you hold the record for the fastest transcontinental run from California to New York. So let's talk about that just really quick. How many days did that take you to run across the U.S.?
Yeah, it took 42 days, 6 hours, and 30 minutes. I started on my 29th birthday on September 12th, 2016. I had a four-person support team the whole way. So it was we had an RV, two guys that would literally crew for me every like 2 to 3 miles. So I never like carried any food or water with me, and one of them would always like treat blisters, and there was a lady that drove the RV. I would meet up with the RV for lunch, and then so like a 40 mile into the day, and then I'd do about another 30 to 35 miles in the afternoon. I was averaging 72 miles a day.
Wow.
And so she drove the RV. She was also a really good cook and a massage therapist. So she was amazing. And she kind of just jumped on at the last, you know, almost the last minute.
So you mentioned challenges like blisters. I mean, I can't imagine having to run on very sore feet like that. What are some other things that you faced, you know, doing that coast to coast run?
Yeah, you know, I actually took a day off completely in the desert on day 7. I just got so hot, like overheated being out in the sun all day because I would start at about 4 a.m., get done around 6 p.m. So it was mostly 14-hour days. And so I had the really bad fever. I just couldn't get to sleep at night. Also, I had a really bad tibial tendonitis. Like the fronts of my ankles were just completely demolished from all the up because there was a 11,000 uphill day in the Yosemite.
Wow.
That just destroyed the fronts of that tibial tendon. And so I took a day off. And so that was kind of something I dealt with, you know, for quite a while, but got better when I got out to flatter ground. And towards the end of the run in Pennsylvania, I had my feet just hurt. Like they're just like, I think I bruised the bones in my feet just so bad with all the steps. Mm. And that was probably the thing that took the longest to recover from, because I think the muscles tend to recover a little bit faster than the bones, but that just like it took, and still to this day, I don't think my feet will ever maybe be quite the same.
Was it kind of scary for you? I mean, when you had to take that rest day fairly early on in your journey and you're thinking, oh, maybe, oh, great, is this what the whole thing is going to be like?
It's amazing because I remember that day out in the desert and we were like, you couldn't be further from anything. It's almost the longest stretch of any highway in the U.S. Between Tonopah and Ely, Nevada, basically like over half the state of Nevada with no towns or anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny, I stayed pretty... I don't know how I just like, I stayed pretty calm, still very, very optimistic about breaking the record, knowing what I could do. But yeah, I was, you know, looking back on it, I would say realistically, it was less than a 50-50 chance of still breaking the record when you have something like that happen so early in a run like that.
And what was the previous record?
Previous record was 46 days and 8 hours.
And that was set in like 1980, right?
Yep. Frank Janino. He was actually at the finish when I got there, and I'd never met him before, and we're good friends now. And so,
oh, wow.
It was incredible to meet him and his wife, Michelle, at the finish.
Okay. So after finishing something like that and being so beat up, and you described, you know, how bad your feet hurt, and then how many years fast forward from then did you decide, I think I want to run even further?
Or maybe months.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it wasn't that long, you know, so that was towards the end of 2016. And I had this idea of doing another transcontinental run, pop into my head about a year later.
Okay.
And
why?
So,
why?
You know, it's just weird. It's like, I feel like the initial inspiration was I did this run across America. I was always out running. I felt like I was just playing a part of it. Like I had a crew that was doing their thing. I had and I saw people taking photos of me and like with groups, and like I never listened to any music, never carried a phone. I was just always running, just keep my head down. And you know, there were a few miles a day that I would walk towards the end of the day if I had time. And I kind of look around and say, oh wow, like look at that sunset or look at that sunrise. But I think I just missed out on so much. And so
you were so focused on the record that you couldn't really enjoy the journey.
Yep. And there's a Facebook group, USA Crossers. And a lot of times I'll follow some of their runs across America. And they're like out there, you know, doing 20, 30 miles a day and like taking time to see stuff. And
yeah,
so that was kind of the initial thought, was like, do another run across America. But like it being me, like I still had to find a way to make it challenging. So the only way that I would have time to take photos and actually enjoy it is if I, and make it as challenging as if I make it longer. And I make it self-supported. And so I was like, well, how do I make a longer run across America? And then like this idea popped into my head. Like when I was a kid, my family and I drove the Alaska Highway from Iowa all the way up to Alaska. And when we did that trip, we met a lot of people in RVs and motorcycles that were doing the trip from Alaska to Florida. And I thought, you know, fast forward, this is long before I was even a runner.
Mm-hmm.
But fast forward about 18 years, and I was like, I wonder if anyone's ever run from Alaska to Florida. And as far as I could tell, it didn't really seem like anyone had, and definitely not self-supported, and definitely not doing like 50 miles a day. So I thought, that would be like my ultimate challenge. Like, just so many different reasons why it'd be amazing. And, but at the same time, it was terrifying. So I kind of put it out there to a few close friends, like, what do you think about this? And, you know, threw it out there to Hoka. And like, I think it was about by this time last year in 2017, I was already pretty much set on doing it. Mm. Although I changed my mind at least 10 times. I'm not even kidding. Like, completely said, I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah.
2017 to 2018 was kind of rough for me for running, and I was kind of getting back into racing. And even like right before I went to Alaska, I told myself, maybe I'm not going to go anymore. So the week of, I actually told my wife there's a 99.9999% chance I'm not going anymore.
Wow. Just because you had such a rough year of running, and so you're like lack of motivation or struggle with injuries or what?
Yeah, I had, you know, I had a couple of good races, but then this was right after I DNF'd at Badwater, and I thought.
And you, let's tell the folks, you've won Badwater twice,
yep,
just for
yep.
context. Okay.
And you have the course record, yep. I think, right?
Yep, that's right.
Okay.
And so I just like, I think it was because I was just like so scared of doing the run, so much stuff that can go wrong up in Alaska, the Yukon, and out there in the middle of nowhere. And so it's just like one of those high risk, high reward things.
Yeah.
You really, really, really want to do it. And you keep telling yourself you're going to do it. But then you like find these times where it's convenient to say no. And so, you know, I already had everything booked, and I actually looked into canceling stuff like reservations and flights, and I couldn't do that. It was too late. So I was like, whatever, I'm just going to go up and just run until I don't feel like I'm safe, or I feel like I'm not getting anything out of it, and just quit. And so I got 2 days, 3 days in, and I was like having the time of my life up there in Alaska. And so just kept going, and then never. And then it was like a joke. If you were to end the run now, Pete, you'd have to go back to Anchorage. Like, you'd have to get like a 10-hour ride back to Anchorage because there's no other airports anywhere. And so like the whole run, even like down in Iowa, I was like, well, Pete, if you quit now, you're going to have to get a ride all the way back to Anchorage.
Well, we actually drove the Alaska Highway this summer, so knowing that you ran on that same section of highway, we just have so much respect for what you accomplished. And I know the feeling of not wanting to commit. We were reluctant to even drive it because we drove from Pennsylvania with a camper because Angie did the Juneau Marathon. And I'm like, do you cool. really? Are you sure you really want to go up there? You know how far that is?
There's no easy way to get to Alaska.
Well, I'm glad you guys drove, though, because so many people I meet, oh, yeah, I've been to Alaska. And like, and then they tell me they took a cruise or they flew. So, yeah, I really think it's not even half the fun is getting there. I think with Alaska, it's like 95% of the fun is getting there.
Yeah, it's an adventure. Let's go to the beginning. You started in Kenai, right? Can you tell folks where that is?
Yeah, so I originally started in Kenai. That was the original plan. And it was actually, I was kind of just trying to be a purist and do Kenai Town, but which is right on the Pacific Ocean. It's the Kenai Peninsula is this little peninsula south of Anchorage where it's got like, you know, if you go to Alaska, it's kind of like the place for lots of salmon fishing in the summer, glaciers, mountains, and all sorts of beautiful stuff. So I started actually a little bit further south in Kenai Town. I actually got a tip from Frank Janino's, one of his friends up there in Alaska. Was like, well, why don't you start at Anchor Point on the Kenai Peninsula because it's the furthest west you can go on continuous highways in the North America. And so I was like, okay, well, maybe I'll start a day early since, you know, I DNF Badwater. I'm a little more recovered than I thought I'd be, you know, a week later. So
it was only a week later.
Wow.
Yeah. I DNF Badwater on a Tuesday, and the following Tuesday is when I started.
Wow.
At Anchor Point. I was just staying in Kenai Town, and a lady came and picked me up and drove me an hour south to Anchor Point, and that's where it all began. It was just her and me.
Kind of unceremonious, no fireworks or
no
press.
I loved it. And then there were some fishermen there, and I met a fisherman named Mike. So it was just Summer and Mike waving me goodbye on the way out of Anchor Point.
So they see you with your stroller, and you're like, yeah, I'm running to Florida.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I'm sure they've seen weirder.
I would love to see that conversation, see the look on their faces.
So you're totally self-supported. You've got a running stroller. Take us through what you packed in it.
Yeah. You know, I had 5 changes of clothes. I was pretty much able to do laundry every 5 days. Most places I stayed at motels probably 75-80% of the run, and stayed at people's houses about 10%, 15%. And then I just had to camp a few nights, which is good because I that leads to my next item is I brought a little A-frame one person tent, and that is the only that and an inflatable pillow are really the only camping things I brought. I didn't pack like really any cooking cooking items, or didn't pack a sleeping bag, didn't pack a sleeping mat. So really, anytime I camped, it was like just laying down clothes on hard ground and just like taking a nap and then getting back out on the road.
Wow. Very bare bones then.
Yeah, I had a bear canister, and the bear canister would hold up to a week's worth of food for the most part, because there were some long stretches there on the Alaska Highway, as you know, where you don't see a town for 200-300 miles, and sometimes you don't even see a gas station for like 200 kilometers.
Yeah.
And other than that, I packed, let's see, I had spare tires for most of the run, just because the stroller I used held up great. You know, I just had one stroller the whole way, but the tires just get demolished eventually on some of those rough shoulders. Packed like a safety equipment, like a life straw. I never really had to use it much. Some electronic items, like several portable chargers to keep stuff charged, lots of cords, let's see, GPS watches, GPS tracker, and also Bluetooth speakers were huge. I loved just listening to music on a speaker box the whole way as well.
How many pairs of shoes?
I went through, let's see, 7. It was funny because I had usually had my wife ship spare shoes along the route. So I always tried to have 2 with me. So one I was wearing, one back up, and then she would ship them. It was a little hard. You know, there were really like no places I could have them shipped to until like a month in. So it wasn't like, oh, I don't have enough shoes, but it was, well, Pete, you're like where you're going to be in 2 weeks. I still can't get it shipped to Watson Lake in time because it takes 3 weeks to get stuff shipped there.
Yeah,
so. Exactly. So how much do you estimate that everything in your stroller combined weighed? I mean, because, you know, that's a long way to run. But then you're pushing all that weight. That's huge.
Yeah. I think especially with water weight, I would usually just fill up water once a day from when I started. But that was like 17 to 20 pounds usually right there. And I estimated including the stroller was 70 to 80 pounds, give or take, each day.
And what was the brand of the stroller?
It's a Thule Glide. It had 3 big like tires that go straight, which was perfect. I didn't have to turn very often, but whenever I had to turn a lot, it kind of got a little awkward.
Okay.
But yeah, they're nice tires. They would inflate, kind of like bike tires.
Any like good luck items, just token items that you brought along?
Oh yeah. You know, up in Kenai, I bought a little Alaska pocket knife. and I got a lot of souvenirs from people. I was self-supported. So the only like aid, I guess if you want to call it aid, was if someone handed me a beer where I couldn't otherwise buy it, that I allowed that. But if I was somewhere where I couldn't otherwise buy something, I wouldn't let someone give it to me. But I did, I bought like a Canada shot glass, that I carried with the rest of the way.
You're picking up license plates too, I think, right?
Yeah, I ended up with 5 license plates at the end. 3 of them were from Florida, so it wasn't too bad. Probably 4 or 5 t-shirts from people, like cross-country teams, like would give me a t-shirt, a few hats, running club hats and things like that. Yeah, like a discovery coin, like that a couple gave me in Alaska that went the rest of the way. And a couple of officers gave me like their badges or like patches as well. That's so awesome. Yeah, I had a lot of cool stuff by the end.
Did you hit any of that smoke in the Yukon? I mean, I know British Columbia and the Yukon was pretty having wildfires over the summer. Did you run into any of that?
Yeah. It was pretty bad. When I ran through along the right past Watson Lake, I actually had to take a day off in Watson Lake because of a forest fire just outside town. But then I actually became friends with one of the officers there, and he gave me the go ahead to get through that night. So I actually started that night and did a double day through the next day, which I wasn't planning on doing. So I didn't sleep at all that day. And so I was pretty sleep deprived. And then the next few days in Northern British Columbia was like just thick smoke, like thicker than the thickest fog. And actually had a couple of friends come up for those couple of days, and they put together a really cool like 5-minute video where we're just like in smoke for the first 2/3 of it, and you can't really see any of the beautiful scenery.
So what's one thing that you remember from Alaska? Anything unusual or just maybe really spectacular that you saw? Did you have any bear encounters maybe?
Yeah, you know, well, it's funny. I joke because I was out on the Appalachian Trail with my friend Harvey Lewis for like 4 or 5 days, and I saw four black bears in one day in New Jersey. I didn't see a single bear in Alaska.
Isn't that crazy?
So Alaska, I saw a lot of moose, but yeah, getting into the Yukon, I saw some grizzlies. Wow. They're like 20 feet away from me. I came up on them and like saw them on the other side of the road, and like, because I don't look around all the time, and I was just like, whoa, what's going on? And I saw black bears. Oh, and then I think one of my favorites was the woodland caribou, and then I saw lots of gigantic wild bison.
Yes.
In British Columbia, the herds. And the funny thing about those herds is moose are the opposite. Moose won't move for me, but they'll move for cars. The bison won't move for cars, but they just get terrified when I came up on them. So all these, I got a video of this herd of buffalo just darting back into the woods, and I couldn't believe it.
You're like partying the sea of bison.
Yeah.
So how'd you find the mosquitoes?
That was funny because the lady that dropped me off in Anchor Point gave me a can of, I had bear spray with me, but I didn't have bug spray. And so she gave me some bug spray right before I started. And I was like, well, I'm never going to use this. And it wasn't until I got to the Yukon, it just got so bad. Like I was running, and especially in the afternoons, like I would actually just pick up my pace, or like I wouldn't walk at all, take a walk break, because I was just so annoyed at the bugs a few days. I was like breathing differently just to get them off me. And
so you couldn't stay ahead of them just running. They would swarm you.
No. I was like the kid on Charlie Brown with like the smoke around. Like they're just like everywhere I went, they were just staying on.
Pigpen, I think that character's name is.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah, when they swarm your nose and mouth especially, it's just like, ah.
I guess we should have asked you at the beginning, what is the overall miles, the total miles from Kenai to Key West?
Yeah, it was supposed to be 5,300, but somehow I added on about 80 with like going in opposite directions and this and that, like picking up supplies. So it ended up being 5,380 miles or 380 something miles.
Did you have any problems with like making wrong turns or getting lost?
No, you know, I only took a wrong turn maybe like once or twice, and it probably cost me like half a mile. So my sister was from back in Iowa, was kind of like my eyes in the sky. She would scout out the route for me like every day, and like every night basically she'd like send me pointers on like, don't take this gravel road, take this one, because it just adds like a tenth of a mile and things like that. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, she's amazing with that type of stuff.
It seems like you had a lot of people online following you too. Did you have a lot of folks coming out to meet you?
Yeah, I did. I would say I had even more come out to run with me on this run than I did 2 years ago, running from San Francisco to New York. So yeah, it was great. Although I will say, from Anchorage, Alaska to Fort St. John, BC, which is like a 30-day span, I didn't have a single runner with me. I met a couple guys that were cycling that...
Well, nobody lives up there.
Yeah, nobody lives up there. Like, our little town in Ohio has about as many people as the Yukon, like 40,000 people live in the Yukon, and almost all of them are in Whitehorse. So, you know, and I liked that. You know, I liked it both ways. I liked having all that just days up there, really just like by myself to stare at all the beautiful territory. And then, and then, you know, getting into like the Midwest, where it's obviously not as scenic, where I've pretty much lived my whole life, and really have a lot of people come out and talk to you.
So you're doing like back-to-back 50 milers day after day. How's your body holding up at this point, like let's say as you're running across the Yukon?
You know, surprisingly well, especially because early on, like in the Yukon, it was just so inconsistent. I just did it based on where I could find somewhere to stay. So sometimes I had like a 75 mile day, and then it followed up with like a nice little easy 30 miler or something the next day. And so yeah, it was, you know, my body held up a lot better than I was thinking it would, because, and I think it wasn't necessarily doing fewer miles than I did from San Francisco to New York, but just having like 3 to 4 more hours of recovery time. So rather than having like 9 or 10 hours off my feet between end of run, start of run, I had more like 14 hours, which just let my body kind of get back to its normal process a little bit better.
So what about, I mean, mentally, you mentioned enjoying long days of solitude. Are you an introvert?
Oh, yeah, I'm absolutely an introvert.
I was going to say, probably an extrovert would have trouble going that far without really having a lot of input from people.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, like, a lot of times when people would come out to run with me, like, you know, friends or family, you know, obviously I'd be, like, super excited to see them. But then, like, if someone I never met came out, I just hate that first
The awkwardness, 10 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah, like, yeah. Of, like, introducing myself, telling them how I feel. Like, sometimes I'd be like, oh, God, another person's coming out to run with me. But then, like, 20 minutes later, I'm looking over at them. Like, if you took a photo of us talking, it's me, like, talking to them and them just being like, okay, Pete.
Like downloading them.
it takes a little while for me to open up to people, I think, that especially ones that I haven't met.
Right.
So did you allow these other people to push your stroller for you when they came out?
No, I never did. And it was funny because a lot of times they would ask and then I was just like cringing, like if a mom or dad brought their kid and they're like, he wants to push your stroller. I'm like, no. Thankfully, no one never had that situation. So,
because you felt like you had to push it the whole way just for the principle of the thing.
Self-supported.
Yeah. And the other thing that, like, a lot of times people would offer me, like, a place to stay that would be, like, 20 miles down the road. And I would always tell them, no, I'm sorry. I go everywhere on foot. So, like, that's why I think I added those 80 miles is because I would never sometimes I would go, like, 2 miles off course to stay at a person's house. But I always tried to do it by foot.
Wow.
So what was going through your mind? I mean, mentally, you probably had a lot of time to think. I mean, was there any new revelations that came to you while you're out there?
Yeah. Gosh, my big mantra 2 years ago when I did San Francisco and New York was like, the first step is always the hardest. So take it and never look back, or just get it out of the way, rip off the Band-Aid as soon as possible, like get your butt out the door of the RV. Hmm. For this one, gosh, I don't know. I think it was just like, enjoy it. Like, just don't even think about finishing the run. And it was all about like counting up. When I ran to New York from San Francisco, it was like counting down the miles, counting down the days till I thought I'd get there. And this run, it was just, who cares? Like, you're gonna be sad when you're out of real estate in Key West. Like, just count up the days, count up the miles, cherish like the 70 mile days where you're just, all right, it's race mode day. And then the shorter days, like, find your own fun, get off the road and go into a bar, meet some new people, or find something cool along the route to take photos of. So enjoy every day and don't think about finishing, because like, it'll be that much less mentally challenging to get there when you're just counting everything up.
I like it.
Yeah.
How are you getting calories in as you're doing so many miles per day? And what are you eating?
Yeah. You know, and that was a thing that I think I learned 2 years ago was, if you're losing weight on a multi-day run like this, you're starting to get into trouble. So I had no problem. And because of my high mileage training, I would do a lot of, over the last few years, I've done a lot of 200 mile a week training. So to do 200 miles, you got to eat like, or to do like 20 to 30 miles a day of running, like 10 miles before work, 15 miles after work type of thing. You just have to be a good eater. And so that was never, so the only issue I had was finding food, not eating it or getting it down. So early on, one of my biggest go-tos was trail mix. And I saw everywhere I went, I had this giant, like, I don't know how many gallon Ziploc bag. And I just kept pouring different kinds of trail. And so it was like 20 different brands of trail mix in this bag eventually. So that was like a good calorie dense way to, like, you know, I probably had like 10,000 calories just in that bag that would last me, you know, it could last me probably a couple of days that's all I was eating.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would eat a lot of like really calorie dense meals. Like, if there was a mom and pop restaurant at a lodge I was staying, like, I'd have 2 burgers and like basically like eating for 2 people. So I'd usually eat about 7,000 to 8,000 calories a day on this run. And then once I got more into like civilization, like Southern Canada and into the U.S., gas station food throughout the day, like breakfast sandwiches, Cliff Bars, lots of like Gatorade and Powerade. But then at the end of the day, it was kind of sad. It's like almost every day I had 2 Subway wraps, a steak, and then a turkey and bacon. And I would like take that with me to wherever I was staying, that night. Wouldn't eat it until I was showered, had my feet up, and it was like, all right, this is the one meal of the day I'm going to really enjoy and like have my feet up, feel like clean. And like, I don't know, people would ask like, do you want to grab like a dinner right here? It's right on your way to your motel. I'm like, no, absolutely not.
This is my routine.
Don't get me out of my routine. So I had Subway for dinner probably at least 50 or 60 times.
Man, they should have sponsored you.
I know. They're impossible to get a hold of. So I gave up on it a long time ago.
I bet. Well, speaking of sponsors, we'd like to thank our episode sponsor, CBDMD. They're makers of CBD products from all natural hemp plants grown right here in the USA. More and more athletes are discovering the natural health benefits of CBD for pain treatment and recovery.
And it's wonderful that it's been getting wider acceptance. Both the World Health Organization and the World Anti-Doping Agency have approved and certified that CBD can be used among athletes and is safe.
And CBDMD makes high quality stuff. I mean, we've been using their freeze roller for sort of our aches and pains. And they also make CBD gummies. They're 100% organic, non-GMO, gluten-free, and vegan, full of those broad spectrum cannabinoid extracts and other beneficial molecules, essential oils, terpenes, and amino acids. They can give you like this energy boost, mental clarity, focus, and promote recovery, which is what CBD is all about. And they're really tasty. So to check it out, go to CBDMD.com. Use the coupon code MTA20 for 20% off any of their products. Once again, that's CBDMD.com and use the coupon code MTA20. We'd also like to thank RX Bar for sponsoring this episode. RX Bar is a whole food protein bar that actually tastes delicious. Because let me tell you what, I've had some nasty protein bars.
That's right. You've likely recognized RX Bar on the shelf of a store. Maybe you've seen ads online. And they're the ones who label the core ingredients on the front of the package. They have 14 delicious flavor varieties, and they do some great seasonal flavors. So whether you like sweet or savory, chocolate or fruit, there's definitely an RX Bar for you. I tend towards the chocolate spectrum. I like the coconut chocolate really well, the mint chocolate. Mm-hmm. They also have these great packets of RX Nut Butter, which contains 9 grams of high-quality protein, and those could be used while you're running, or you can spread it on fruit, rice cakes, or you can eat it straight out of the pouch. For 25% off your first order of the bestseller variety pack, visit rxbar.com/MTA and enter the promo code MTA at checkout.
Once again, that's rxbar.com/MTA and enter the code MTA for 25% off your first order of the bestseller variety pack. Valid in the U.S. only and for a limited time. The Alaska Highway ends at Dawson Creek in British Columbia, right? So you got off the Alaska Highway in British Columbia. And then what was the rest of your route down to Florida?
Yeah, so from Dawson Creek, went kind of straight east through Alberta, near Edmonton, and then pretty much east through Saskatchewan. So I think a lot of people thought I was going to kind of like jump into, I don't know, Montana and all the western mountain states. But actually the fastest route was to just kind of keep going east. Mm-hmm. And then down through North Dakota and then down to Minnesota. And I actually stayed at my sister's house. I have two sisters, and the one that was in charge of my route, I was able to run to her house in Cedar Falls, Iowa. So that was kind of fun. I got to catch up with the family there. And then on down, like Illinois was a long state, then through Kentucky, Tennessee, ran through Nashville.
Did you have to pay tolls in Illinois?
Oh no, but Illinois at first, you know, one of my favorite days of the whole run was in Illinois but then other than that day, like a lot of Illinois, like the shoulders are terrible. That's kind of my big thing. Like if there's great shoulders, I don't care how bit annoyingly mm-hmm. ugly the scenery is. But if it's got bad shoulders, so then Alabama was the scariest easily because it was getting darker in the morning. So a lot of times like rush hour was sneaking into the dark. You know, 7 a.m. to 8 a.m. was still, the sun was just coming up, and Alabama was a nightmare. It was a great, you know, I had fun. Yeah, I'd never really been to Alabama before.
But the shoulders weren't very good, though.
No, and it was like, I call it RSO, rumble strip only shoulders.
Wow. Did you have any close calls with traffic? Because I know some people, they won't move over even if they have room. It's just like, they're so rude.
Yeah, there were some like truck drivers who I'm certain saw me, and like not only could I touch the semi, I could like touch the semi with my elbow, and that like, and then like they didn't slow down at all. So that was like my thing. Like I didn't care if people came within a couple feet of me, but if they weren't slowing down, it just, and then like stuff would blow off the stroller. So yeah, I had a few closer calls, but I never like had like a call like where like I felt like I was gonna die. I lost this. I had to ditch the stroller into the shoulder one time. I was probably a little overprotective because it was in the dark. So you can't, in the dark, it's sometimes kind of hard to tell.
Yeah.
If someone sees you, but yeah, the stroller took a tumble and I had to pick up all the pieces and start over.
Wow.
Did you have like highway patrol or law enforcement officers talk to you along the way or check out what you're doing?
Yeah. Up in the Yukon, a nice lady came out and just wanted to make sure I was okay. That long stretch between Haines Junction and Whitehorse. But then, yeah, like I met some officers that like would come and run with me or bike alongside me.
Nice.
But then, yeah, it wasn't until I got police escort across the bridge into Kentucky from Illinois. But just a couple officers were like, oh, I got a call. I had a, like, someone was concerned that you had a baby or something like that.
That's true. Yeah. It's probably the covered stroller, they're thinking.
Yeah, I pushed my baby here from Alaska.
Yeah.
It sounds like you ran, if we go back to Illinois, you ran down through Illinois to southern Illinois, like by Cairo, right? And then across the bridge into Kentucky.
Yep, yep.
Okay. Yeah, we used to live down there. From Kentucky, where'd you go from there?
Tennessee through Nashville, and then northeast, yeah, Alabama, Huntsville, and then Georgia, and then Florida. Florida was like 11 days. It was so long. It doesn't, you know, it's not a huge state, but it's like a very long state, especially when you include the Keys. So it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed Florida, I think. Besides Alaska and Yukon, it was my favorite.
When you got into Florida, what month was it?
It would have been like the end of October.
So it's starting to cool off a little bit. I mean, I'm sure you still had some hot stretches through the Midwest, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was awesome because like every time I ran with someone, they're like, oh, you brought the cold weather. If you were here a week earlier, it would have been 90 degrees. And I heard that like every single week. And
wow.
So it was like, I was like kind of migrating with the weather because for a longest time the hottest day was the first day in Alaska when it was 77, and then started to get some 80 degree days like in Illinois, and then the last like 2 days were just insanely hot in around the Keys, especially with the humidity. So I was really glad I didn't get super hot up on the Alaska highway because I was thinking your water gets warm and you have like 70 miles to the next place where you can get like tap water, and it would have been a nightmare. I mean, it could have been disaster.
So by the time you got to Florida, how did you feel? How was your body holding up?
Pretty good. I'm still recovering, you know, several weeks later. But I was very, very pleased. Someone asked me like, well, you going to turn around and go back to Alaska? And I, you know, in New York City 2 years ago, I was like, heck no. And then I was like, I'd love to go back to Alaska, but if it weren't for winter, you know, money, going back to work and having a wife at home, I would totally do it.
Wow. That's amazing.
So did you have any kind of ceremony or a crew that was waiting for you when you got down to Key West?
Yeah. You know, it was perfect because when I finished in New York City, it was overwhelming. I finished like rush hour on a Monday.
Wow.
Tons and tons of people came out and ran with me. You know, it wasn't like 1,000 people were waiting for me at New York City, City Hall, but it was like, you know, a good crowd and lots of interviews the next day in New York City. This one was awesome because it was my wife, a few friends from like the southern Florida area, and then another friend and one of his friends who was from the Northeast who just happened to be there. And yeah, it was perfect. I didn't want to tell my close friends and family not to come down, but I was like, kind of hope it's just like a few people. And I did one interview at the finish with a lady from Key West, and she put it out there and like tons and tons of like local news and like even like the Today Show, I think a couple other national news picked it up, and like I just had to do one interview, and like she like sent it out, and so I was like, oh good, because like sometimes I do like 30 interviews and not even all of them make it to like a local news. So it was perfect. Went straight and showered, went straight out to the bars and grabbed dinner and just celebrated, and then like a day and a half later my wife and I went home, and it was great.
Did you wake up the next day and feel like weird that you weren't running? I mean, it's like, what do I do with myself now?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. I think the weirdest thing is getting in a car. Like I was just thinking a little bit ago, we got snow here in Ohio, and I was like, I'm already not a good driver, but couple that with like not being in a car for 100 days and then like not driving for like 120 days. I'm like, I'm driving like a great grandma right now.
It'd be faster just to run literally to the store, huh?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So how are you ever going to top this? I mean, this is incredible. I mean, you'd have to run across Siberia or something.
To tip of South America.
It's funny. I always like time these. I've timed these last two TransCon runs with moving for my wife's job. And then I just find a job wherever we go. And so, yeah, it's kind of funny. Like I told my wife, if we have to move again, I'll just run across Russia or China or something. But I think in all honesty, I don't know. Like, I think it'd be like silly to say I won't do another TransCon run someday, but there's a good chance it'll be like really like legitimately for fun. Like when I'm 50, 60 years old, or like a retirement gift to myself. So, no, I don't know. Like there's a lot in like ultra running and maybe shorter FKT type stuff that I'd like to get back into, because it's a long preparation process to do it and then a long time to recover. So I don't know. I don't know if I have another one in me anytime soon.
It definitely, I'm sure, changed your perspective forever just about, running and...
And you think about, like, there's, like, nothing outside of your reach now. If you could do that, if you could run from Alaska to Florida, I mean, I can imagine just the confidence that you have in life now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, there were so many, like, little obstacles along the way that I had to figure out. And I think it's just, like, things that I think I would, like, if you just told me before I started the run, like, oh, you're going to blow out both your tires. You're going to have to run 100 miles on two flat tires till you get to the next motel that has your tires waiting for you. It's like things like that. It's like, man, if you had told me that, I'd be like, there's 100 reasons why I wouldn't do it to begin with as well. So I think just knowing that like things are always going to go wrong, you just got to sort them out and not lose your cool.
So people that are going to listen to this conversation, and they're not ultra runners, they're never going to do something as epic as what you did, I wonder what they can learn from your run from Alaska to Florida.
Yeah, you know, I think another one of my slogans for this run was like unlocking my wildest dream. So, you know, if there's something out there, and like obviously there's a lot of risks in life, but for me, even if I failed, I think I would have still been happy I did it, as long as I came home in one piece. So,
yeah.
And I've had a lot of friends that I've met, like in running, that we're gonna break this record or break that record or break 2 hours and 25 minutes in a marathon. And then a lot of the times, you know, they come up with an excuse to say, oh, well, you know, had a kid or just changed jobs, it wasn't the right time. So I think it's just like there's never a right time for anything. And like, for me, it was so soon after I'd already ran across the U.S. Didn't make sense financially buying a new house here in the Cleveland area, but it was like, I don't know, I think we can make it work. And my wife was very supportive. So and being away from my wife that long, it's how can you be away from your wife for 100 days? And like, she came out once to visit me in North Dakota, but it was like, I don't know. I think, you know, I think independence is a great strength that, you know, a lot of people have. And if you see something you want to do, like, you're going to be, I think, a better person for it to the people around you if you get to pursue what you really want to do.
Yeah. You could try to foresee like all of the contingency plans that you might have to have in place and calculate all the risk and the pros and cons, but sooner or later, you just got to go for it. And maybe people are thinking that, you know, when it comes to running their first marathon, and they're intimidated by the distance because it's a scary distance. And like you folks just heard in this conversation, even after Pete ran his first marathon, he swore he would never do it again. So.
Yeah. Well, and when I was in college, I had friends, like I did a 20K at the end of high school. And I thought that was like, wow, I'm like, you know, I've almost made it to a half marathon. And yeah, I was like in college, I was just like, I don't get how people are running marathons. They were raising like money for charity and things like that, classmates. And I was like, I'm not doing that. Like that's insanity. So no, I think, that's a beautiful thing about running is you can just like keep going and keep going if you really set your mind for it and you really train for it. I didn't get into like ultra marathons thinking like, oh yeah, you know, it's 2011 and 2016, I'm going to go for the record run across America or anything like that. So each year I would like add, you know, slowly build up and slowly build up. And, you know, I have some friends that they just want to get to the 100 miler or something and they don't want to like take the time to build up. And so I think like when you're training for something, you have things in your mind that you might want to do someday, just like as inspirations. And then like pretty soon you'll just find yourself there on the doorstep, ready to go through that door. So yeah, you know, that's the thing I kind of struggled with after running across America in 2016 is like, I can't really go further. And then somehow I figured out how to do that this year. But at the same time, I think I just kind of want to start reducing my mileage and get faster again.
Right on.
Well, it's a neat thing with running. You just never know where it's going to take you. And there's so much. There's so many opportunities. There's so many things that mm-hmm. people can do. You know, if longer distances intimidate them, and there's always shorter stuff, speed work, there's just so much that you can challenge your body and your mind.
So many epic places to go run, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So. Well, it's been great to talk to you, Pete. I appreciate it. And it was a lot of fun to follow your journey. Folks, if you want to check out hashtag Key to Key, that's K-E, the number two, and then K-E-Y, Key to Key. And where else could people find you online?
Yeah, Instagram, Pete Kostelnik on there. Just my first and last name. Pete's Feet Across America, Pete's F-E-E-T Across America on Facebook. And then those are pretty much the main two. And then I post all my runs on Strava as well. And I love Strava.
Do you know how many total miles for the year you're up to?
Yeah, no, it's funny. I think I'm going to hit 10. So 2 years ago, I missed 10,000 miles when I ran across America. I had done a lot of training that year and got those 3,000 miles across the U.S. pretty quick. But I missed 10. I didn't check until December, and I realized I was going to come up a few hundred miles short. So this year, I'm actually sitting here. It's almost December. I'm at about 9,600. So I have, if I can get 400 miles in this last month, I'll get to 10,000 for the year, which will be the first and last time I'll ever do that.
That is huge. That is amazing.
Yeah. You can run to our house and we'll feed you dinner and give you a place to stay.
There you go.
Maybe a couple hundred miles there.
Yep.
Well, that's awesome. Well, thanks again, Pete, for all the inspiration and letting us debrief you about your amazing run. It's going to make my smaller runs seem a lot more doable now. You know, next time I'm out there doing a marathon, I'm like, okay, if this guy can run 50 miles a day, day after day, I can get through this race. What do you think, Angie?
Oh, yeah, totally.
So thanks for the inspiration.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks,
you
Pete.
You bet. Well, thank you so much for having me.
All right. Have a great day.
All right. Well, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Pete Kostelnik. It does really reframe, you know, in one's mind, what is possible, you know, what the human spirit can accomplish in the human body. Makes my easy runs seem a lot easier.
That's for sure.
A couple other little data points that we didn't get to in the episode. The total elevation gain during this run was 175,301 feet. That's like 6 Mount Everest.
Wow.
The total time moving, I guess maybe, you know, for GPS tracking, they figured this out, 969 hours and 32 minutes. The highest mileage day was 93.2 miles on day 24 in the Yukon. And of course, he had 1-0 day, like you heard him talk about, because of the fires, also in the Yukon. Highest mileage state was Alaska, 622 miles, and the lowest mileage state was Kentucky with 110. Well, he really got to see a lot of the good old USA and Canada, didn't he?
That's right.
I'm sure it's a lot different than going through in a car.
Yeah, I'm just thinking back to a lot of things that we saw during our drive and, you know, just imagining running on some of those really narrow highways, rutted sides of the road, seeing some of the wildlife on foot rather than just passing in a car.
The drive is amazing. I mean, it's so scenic. The Alaska Highway is just so vast.
It's just amazing, the overall journey. I'm just thinking from a logistical perspective of having to plan to carry all your food and water and supplies and be able to restock yourself on foot. You know, I can imagine after running over 50 miles in a day, is it really worth it to, you know, have to then go to a grocery store to stock up on your food or water? I'm just...
Makes you careful about what you buy.
Right, exactly.
That should be the rule for shopping. You have to carry it home by foot.
You're going to start grocery shopping in our family then?
Have all these jugs of milk.
That's right.
Well, now it's time for this episode's quick tip. And we got a lot of questions in back when we did our listener Q&A a couple episodes ago. But there were a lot of questions that we didn't have a chance to get to. So here's one of those. And it has to do with tips for older runners.
Yeah, it's really exciting that we have a lot of older runners in our listening audience. And we see people running their first marathons in their 60s and 70s. Of course, 40s and 50s as well. A person is actually considered a master's runner from the age of 40 on up. So I'm now officially in that category, I'm happy to say.
As of
couple of weeks.
As of a couple of weeks ago.
Masters runners now represent more than 50% of all marathon finishes.
Wow.
So it's a category that's growing strong, and, you know, just it's really exciting to see that. However, I would say that there are a number of physiological differences between a masters runner in their 40s and, say, a masters runner in their 60s. Some races actually break down the masters category down more, with 50-plus being grandmasters and 60-plus being senior grandmasters. And there's actually a push to make another category called veteran grandmasters for ages 70-plus. So I think it's an awesome trend in the running community is that they're having to create more age categories because people are running longer and longer. People are starting to run in later life. And so it's just really an awesome thing to behold.
Yeah, I remember Phil Moffatone said he's waiting for the 100 to 110 age group.
That's right. That's right. So the sky's the limit. And so we got a couple questions, similar questions that have to do with runners in their 60s. The first one came from Wally, and he said, how would you adjust marathon training for an older runner, like in their 60s, versus training for younger runners? And then another question from Dave in England. He said, I'm a runner in my early 60s, but I like to think that I have it in me to complete many more races. Training for a marathon really takes it out of me. I follow plans culminating in 22-mile runs. Given my age, should I concentrate on running for, say, 3.5-hour long runs rather than distance? Any other tips for someone my age? And he says, thanks, love the show.
So any tips, Angie?
Of course, I've got tips. Yes. And I'm not going to really get into the physiological changes that come with growing older, but we have some great links over on our blog that we've done some articles in the past about masters runners, senior marathoners. We did a podcast on the aging marathoner. So we'll include those links in our show notes if you're interested more in this topic, or maybe you fall in that category. But obviously, as we age, the body structures are getting older. But one great thing about aging that you might not think about is that as we age, we become mentally tougher. And we usually have more wisdom and common sense when it comes to training. Now, I say usually because we still have to learn things the hard way sometime. But you typically see masters runners are less prone to mistakes and injuries due to trying to do too much or to take on challenges without training. You know, you tend to simply realize that your body needs to be respected, and you need to really put in the time for training and for recovery. And with age, most runners find that their pace eventually starts slowing down. Now, of course, this depends on the age that you started running. If you started running in your 60s, you'll probably see a few years of improvement in your pace. But over time, our pace does slow, and this can result in long runs of 20 miles or more, requiring a lot more time and taking a bigger toll on your body. And as we age, it takes longer for the body to recover. So it's really wise to modify your training to fit your needs. So I have a few tips here that you may want to consider if you are falling into this category. You find yourself as a masters runner and maybe you're just not seeing the results, or you're finding that your body needs more recovery time. So the first thing I would suggest is to balance easy and hard. Many masters runners find that running every other day during marathon training can help to reduce the effects of the high impact exercise, and it gives your body more time to recover. So when you're younger, a lot of times you can run every day and you don't really see the effects. But sometimes as you get older, not always, you can find that you get better results by running every other day. Also, make sure the majority of your training runs are done at an easy pace so that your paced runs are higher quality. It's kind of like the 80-20 rule. Also, spend extra time warming up before running and cooling down afterward. And another way to balance easy and hard is to use a 10-day training cycle instead of the typical 7-day cycle. So that would mean that you're only doing a long run every 10 days instead of the typical every 7 days. And that's a way to work in extra rest, extra recovery into your schedule, and you can find that your body may adapt better to that as an older runner. The second thing I would suggest trying is to run for time, not distance. Many older runners find that spending 5+ hours on a long run simply wears them down too much. And I think Dave was kind of alluding to this in his question. Studies show that there's little aerobic benefit of doing a run longer than 3 hours. Now, of course, there are benefits to time on your feet for building up the support structures of the body. But as far as your aerobic system goes, you're not getting actual benefits after that 3-hour point. So a master's runner really has to weigh the benefits versus the risks of doing long runs greater than 3 to 4 hours. Sometimes when older runners switch to like a 10-day training cycle, they'll do like a medium length long run in the middle of that and then have like their 3 hour long run at the end of that 10 days. So it helps balance out getting that time on your feet and keeping those support structures strong while allowing enough time for recovery. Obviously, everyone is different. Some people continue to handle the miles-based training plans just fine, but it's something to consider if you're noticing you're not getting good results. A third thing I would recommend is to cross train. Intersperse your running days with low impact cross training, things like swimming, yoga, rowing, Pilates, strength training, you know, whatever is your jam, as long as it's low impact. That way you're still reaping the benefits of exercise, but you're keeping other body systems strong and flexible. In particular, regular strength training is an absolute must for masters runners who want to improve and stay injury free. Everything you read related to masters runners, it says strength train, strength train, strength train. So, you know, this is something that if you don't do it already, if you're kind of hit and miss with it, getting into a program of doing regular strength training like twice a week is going to be so valuable, not only for your running right now, but also keeping your body strong for the future. So basically, there is like no downside to strength training for a masters runner, you know, unless you do too much too soon and get injured. But it's so valuable to add into your training regimen.
Well, I'm glad I'm young. I don't have to worry about any of this right now. Right?
You're not as young as you used to be. I mean, you're still relatively young, but yeah, you're looking 40 in the eye.
You're supposed to say, no, every runner needs a strength train.
That's right. I think people know my position on strength training.
And two more points here when it comes to considerations for older runners. The next one is recovery.
Yes, focus on recovery. For the master's runner, it's really important to dial in and maintain an effective recovery routine. So this may include things like foam rolling, compression gear, getting regular massages, getting plenty of sleep, a balanced, healthy diet, drinking lots of water, and regular rest days. And of course, I would say this applies to any runner. You know, you need to dial in and maintain your recovery routine. But as you get older, you can't take as many shortcuts. So when it comes to rest days particularly, you may find that you need 2 days of rest per training week instead of one. And the key on your rest days is to avoid things like heavy yard work or other activities so you get the full benefit of recovery. So you really have to, you know, listen to your body and make sure that you're getting that recovery time so that it can perform well and keep you going strong for many years to come. And the final thing that I would encourage is to work with a coach. If you're finding that your routine is no longer working for you, if you've been dealing with injury, or you're unsure of how hard you should be pushing yourself, a running coach can help you dial in your training with personalized workouts and recovery. So it can really take the guesswork out of it. You can have someone who's there to really make sure that the plan works for you and who gets to know you and can really make sure that you're getting the best out of yourself.
All right. So there's a look at some changes to make in your training if you are an older runner. But no one likes to think of themselves as an older runner or older anything, right?
Well, I think it's a privilege to get older. I mean,
you think so?
Getting older is not just something that is a given. I mean, you think, you know, hundreds of years ago, a lot of people didn't live to the age of 40.
Yeah.
So I think it's a privilege to get older. It's a privilege to be active and to be running long distance as an older runner. You know, like I said, it's not something we should take for granted, something to be thankful for and to embrace getting older because it's really exciting. I think that the things that are possible as an older runner and I think you appreciate it more as well.
Yeah. Well said, Angie. I appreciate that. Well, that's it for this episode. Thank you, everyone out there, for tuning in. We always love to hear from you. If you want to drop us an email, we have a contact form on our website. Lots of other goodies over there for you. Thanks again to Action Heat for sponsoring this episode. They make the world's best heated clothing. Check them out at actionheat.com/MTA. Well, until next time, keep taking action in your goals. And remember, you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life. Well on my way, well on my way. No way.